Now, looking back at 2016, it might seem like there was only one story, the presidential election. That story did dominate news coverage for months, and the election of Donald Trump has been at the top of the news cycle since November. But that wasn't the only thing that happened in 2016. It was a big news year in Wisconsin, and Rob Menser is with us now to recap some of those big stories. He's a storytelling editor for USA Today Network Wisconsin, and he's based in Wausau. He's joining us today from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Wausau. Rob, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Judith. Thanks.
So as we mentioned, the presidential election was a huge story in 2016. One of the Wisconsin angles of the story was the evolving relationship between House Speaker and Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan and President-elect Donald Trump. How did that relationship change over the course of the campaign and since?
Sure. Well, this was sort of an ongoing soap opera. It reminds me a bit of the it's like the plot of a romantic comedy. It's like You've Got Mail, where in the beginning the two leads like can't stand each other, and then gradually they do fall in love by the end. And that is sort of Paul Ryan and Donald Trump in 2016. So in the first months of the year, Ryan criticized Trump for violence at rallies. He criticized Trump for not clearly condemning the Ku Klux Klan in a CNN interview in March. So in the lead up to the presidential primary in Wisconsin, Ryan said that he was not ready to support Trump for president. And Trump shot back that he was not ready to support Paul Ryan's agenda as speaker. So there's other twists and turns at the end of the year, as you would always have in a good romantic comedy. But guess what? Trump won the nomination. He won the election. And Trump and Ryan had a couple of meetings. They sort of talked through policy views. And now, you know, post-November 9th, they seem to be hand in glove. And Ryan's excited, looking forward to working with President Trump and sending a bunch of bills for Trump to sign. So it all worked out for political conservatives anyway.
So Wisconsin was the last state to hand Donald Trump a defeat in the primary season. And so clearly he was not the most popular candidate in the state, and that was with the electorate and also many of the political figures. But as you said, Ryan has come around. He's excited about working with Trump. Do you see that as a larger trend playing out in Wisconsin with political officials?
Well, yeah, no, for sure. Wisconsin was kind of the last stand of the never Trump conservatives, right? A lot of conservative intellectuals and commentators were at that time making a case that Donald Trump was unfit to be president and a bad, you know, would make a bad candidate for the Republican Party. But you know, winning elections as a way of papering over those differences in a lot of cases. Many of those voices have sort of fallen away. And to be fair, the elected leaders, including Ryan, were always a little – they were never quite so so out in front on the never Trump stuff as the commentators, conservative intellectuals were. And really when it comes down to it, I mean Paul Ryan's major priority is – tax cuts. That's what I mean. He wants in particular to have tax cuts that make the federal tax system less progressive. They are lucrative for top earners. And it turns out that on that issue, Ryan and Trump have no tension whatsoever. They're very much in tune. So you know, I think that there might be a number of other issues that they don't see eye to eye on. But on what, you know, what Paul Ryan sees as his biggest priority, they were very much eye to eye.
We're talking with Rob Menser right now. He's storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin, and we're taking a look back at the big news stories of 2016. Now, not only did we elect people in November, it was the first time that we had to present IDs at the polls in order to place those votes. Here in Wisconsin, how did that go?
Well, it's a bit hard to say, right? There are anecdotal reports of people being turned away from the polls. There are somewhat wild, inflated claims that have circulated that haven't been checked. Certainly, it affected some number of voters. It's a bit surprising or I don't know, it's hard to think through that the law was passed in 2011, and this is the first first major election. There was like a nonpartisan primary a couple years ago, but the first major election where the voter ID law was actually in effect.
And there was a voter ID education campaign that made headlines quite a bit in the last year, and especially leading up to that November election. Do we have any sense of how effective that was?
So one of the things that what happened was in very late in September, close to the election, organization Vote Riders that advocates for voting, making voting easier, they released recordings. They had evidence that DMVs all over the state of Wisconsin were illegally withholding state ID cards. They were giving people wrong information about the voter ID law, and so there was a major event right at the end, right in October, where a federal judge ordered a state investigation of how the law was being administered. The state came back and said, yes, in fact, that it had gotten a bunch of things wrong. Training was bad in these DMV offices. And then there's this last minute education drive that you mentioned that's how we got that. There was a website, there were some broadcast ads intending to promote the truth of the law, which is you can get for free a state ID card if you need one to vote, whether or not you have a driver's license or whatever else. I think that everyone acknowledges that the it's a hard group to reach, right? The people who don't have an ID might also be the people who have trouble reaching the DMV office and so on.
We're looking back at some of the biggest Wisconsin news stories from 2016 with Rob Mentzer of the USA Today Network, Wisconsin. And we're also taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you think was the biggest story in Wisconsin this year? What was the biggest story in your region or your community? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation and take your calls in just a minute. Stay here with us on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're picking up our discussion now with Rob Mentzer of the USA Today Network, Wisconsin, about the top Wisconsin news stories of 2016. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What would you nominate as one of the biggest stories of the past year? What made big news in your part of the state? And what did you think of coverage of the news in Wisconsin in the past year? Call in now at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Rob, in August, a former Milwaukee police officer shot and killed Sylville Smith in the Sherman Park neighborhood, which set off riots and significant unrest in that area. Tell us about the details of that story.
Sure. So the facts of this incident are complicated. It is not as clear-cut a case as some other high-profile police shootings from around the country have been. Sylville Smith was running away from police. He was armed. He had a gun on him. And we know from there have just been charges released just in the last couple weeks against the former police officer. Smith was trying to throw the gun away. He was trying to throw it over a fence. And as he was doing that, the police officer Dominique Keegan Brown shot Sylville Smith twice and killed him. Now, in that neighborhood, in that Sherman Park neighborhood on Milwaukee's northwest side, this did have the effect. It set off a powder keg. There were protests, and there was out and out rioting and fires and that followed real unrest. Ultimately, what came of it? You noted that Keegan Brown is a former police officer. Mm-hmm. He was just charged this month with a homicide charge in this incident. He also was charged a couple months later after the shooting of sexual assault and prostitution in an incident where prosecutors say he raped an intoxicated man the day after the shooting and bragged that he could do whatever he wanted without repercussions. Both of those cases will be adjudicated in court. That remains to be seen. In a sort of perhaps more hopeful news out of this story, it has spurred some attempts to aid the community economically. There are new pushes for economic development in the Sherman Park neighborhood, and Milwaukee received a federal grant for, I think it was $5 million to go to boost existing neighborhood programs that are aimed at helping young people in that neighborhood.
And actually, coming up on Tuesday, we'll be talking with someone from the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council about calls for release of the police body cam video from that case. So still more to look into. Rob, another big story this year. For the first time since 1972, UW-Madison is not in the nation's top five research universities, according to the National Science Foundation. What led to that?
Well, so this is in a way a bit of a more subtle story than some of the other big headline dominating stories that we have been talking about. But it is it could signal the fruit of some long-term trends in Wisconsin. Obviously, the UW system as a whole has seen steady erosion of state support. That's going back, that's over the course of decades. Most recently, in the 2015 state budget, Governor Scott Walker and lawmakers cut $250 million from the system's overall budget. So it makes sense that there would be effects from this, and it's possible that this is one year, this is more of a fluke. So to be explicit about it, University of Wisconsin-Madison fell from being ranked number 4 to being ranked number 6. It's not as if it fell to 28 or something, but it's seen as, and it was characterized as, potentially a canary in the coal mine, or potentially the start of a troubling trend that could ultimately reduce the clout and the prestige of that institution.
And Governor Walker will be making his budget address soon. He'll be submitting a budget. There will be budget discussions with the legislature. Does information like this perhaps influence what they decide to do with requests from UW-Madison for funding?
I think that if I'm not mistaken, I think legislators are looking to have said that they're looking to add some amount of funding to UW system. Now who knows, right? And it's a long budget process, and there's going to be a bunch of fights about that. But I do think that to some extent, the UW system has been a whipping boy among some legislators. It's unquestionably the case. But I think at the same time, there's a state pride and a sense that the institution contributes economically to the state, which is demonstrable. So, we'll see, right? We'll see how it plays out. The people are pretty dug in on their partisan sides, but I don't imagine that there's a lot of lawmakers who like the prospect that UW-Madison loses prestige.
So, Rob, one big story in northern and western Wisconsin in particular this year was flooding. In August, there was nearly a foot of rain in western Wisconsin, hitting Trempealeau and Buffalo counties especially hard. How much damage was there after that really pretty dramatic weather event?
So there were a few instances of serious flooding with major damages in the Northwoods or in western Wisconsin. I think that one was FEMA estimated that there were $30 million in damages when you count damage to homes, businesses, and infrastructure. In September, there were floods across the Northwoods. From Ashland over to Ironwood, and that was estimated at another $20 million. Wisconsin did apply for and did get federal funds to assist in rebuilding, but these things don't happen overnight, and for sure these are both events that will have effects long in the future.
We've all been tracking closely and for quite a while the crisis at some of the veterans facilities in Wisconsin, and this year especially the Wisconsin Veterans Home at King came under fire. What are the charges of what's been going on there?
So King Veterans Home is a state-run nursing home for veterans. It's located sort of halfway between Stevens Point and Appleton. And in late August, the Capital Times published a big story looking at conditions that included allegations that it was hugely understaffed, poorly managed, lacked resources to help residents. There were some images showing, sort of gross water in tubs and signs that raise questions about sanitary conditions. And it certainly got the attention of lawmakers. There have been investigations launched. In November, Governor Scott Walker announced that the head of the State Department of Veterans Affairs would step down. But there was another, there was a story that came out this week, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported that, that there was evidence found, the federal government found evidence of a cover up of a particular safety violation, at the home. So I think that to some extent the investigations are still going to be ongoing and we don't know what all the fallout will be.
Well, and I believe just today there was actually, in that state audit, it came out that a claim that a whistleblower had made was in fact true. So this is certainly ongoing. And this is also on the heels of all the issues that were at the Toma VA hospital as well. It seems like there's really a systematic problem with managing these veterans facilities.
Yes, it does seem like it's some of the allegations are familiar. One of the most striking things to me, especially in the original report, was that the King Veterans Home in recent years had been running a surplus.
Right.
They had gotten between $30 million and $40 million in its last two-year budget cycle in federal Medicaid payments, more than what they were spending on actual patient care or facilities. So they would transfer out, maybe it was, it was up to $12 million this year back to Madison to pay for administrator salaries or other, you know, sort of administrative department expenses that don't have any direct effect on the veterans at King Veterans Home. This seems like something is, that can't be right.
Finally, one of the most recognizable musical groups from Wisconsin released their first album in 5 years, Bon Iver. What do you think of it, Rob? It's called 22 a Million.
I like it. It's weird, but you know what? I'm down. I'm interested in it. Yeah, Justin Vernon, they love him in Eau Claire. But yeah, 22 a Million came out at the end of September. Vernon had a big press conference there in Eau Claire, and just recently we found out that album was nominated for a Grammy. So good for that guy. That's a point of Wisconsin pride. I think that his connection to his hometown. He's behind a big summer music festival
right.
there.
He's Eau Claire's,
behind a
right.
yeah behind a big downtown hotel development there. And so you know, every five years we get a pretty cool album from that guy.
Well, Rob, thanks so much for being with us today and for coming on with us. I think pretty much every Friday through the last year. And Happy New Year.
Hey, thanks. You too.
That was Robert Menser. He's storytelling editor with USA Today Network, Wisconsin, based in Wausau. He joined us to look back at the top Wisconsin news stories of 2016. And if you have an idea of one of the top stories that we didn't get to today, post it over on the Central Time Facebook page. We'd love to see what caught your interest. Coming up, we get the story of some of the most useful inventions that benefit us every day, but that we don't really think much about where they came from. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.